Yes, it is. Beautiful day to be outside. We need to find one of our window partners to come in and make these open up. We've got these almost floor-to-ceiling windows right here. Just pick it up on days like today and let the smell of this Palo Verde right here just drift in and a little breeze and enjoy the sunshine.
Besides, they're really tinted and it's dark. It would be nice if it was a little more natural light.
It was
probably nice in the summertime, but yeah.
It's facing north. It doesn't get any direct sunlight.
That's true.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you have a question about your landscape or gardening. We were talking last segment about fertilizing, and I don't know where a 509 area code is, so I'm not.
Probably a cell phone, huh?
Yeah, cell phone from out of state. So I don't know where in the state they live, but they're obviously below their end because they have citrus. And we were talking about fertilizing. They wanted to know where under the tree do you fertilize?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Does it matter?
It does matter. The feeder roots, the little hair roots and feeder roots that absorb nutrients are out, you know, a ways away from the trunk. It can be clear out at the drip, what we call the drip line, or even beyond of the tree. So if you poured water over the canopy of a tree and it ran down the leaves and it spilled on the ground like it runs off your roof, out there at the widest point where the foliage is, that's what we call the drip line. So you want to fertilize maybe back in towards the center of the tree a little ways and out beyond the drip line a little ways in a band according to the size of the tree. But out, that's where you want to apply your fertilizer. It's also where you want to make sure that the tree gets watered or irrigated. You know, the roots, that big old heavy anchor roots that have developed, you know, as the tree has grown, that are up by the trunk of the tree, don't really have the capability of absorbing, you know, your nutrients and your moisture and that sort of thing. So out a ways from the trunk is where you want to fertilize. That's a great question.
Now, that was. And what else can you fertilize in that time? Instead of citrus,
probably everything in your yard mid-February needs fed. Shade trees, vines, shrubs, ground covers, even flowers and vegetables, which you should be feeding more regularly than that. But there isn't anything really in your yard or landscape that shouldn't be fertilized in the early spring. So when we say citrus feeding time, February 14th, Valentine's Day, that's really the time to be feeding everything. And you can use your citrus food on shade trees, on desert trees. It's fine. You don't need to go buy three or four different kinds of fertilizer to do it.
That was my question. If your yard is a xeriscape, you know, generic indigenous tree, do you need? I have never fertilized a mesquite or a Palo Verde. Should I be?
Well, you know, do they absolutely need it? No. Would it help them? Sure. I mean, they can be more luxuriant. I mean, those trees have the ability to survive on very little water and not much, obviously, in the way of nitrogen. But in most cases, I think we want our landscapes to look a little better than the native desert looks, especially in the dead of summer. So do they absolutely need it? No. Would it make them look, at least in the spring before they flush new growth, it would certainly look more luxuriant in your landscape.
We're sure going to have a beautiful desert this spring.
Boy, the wildflower season should be a knockout.
You drive up around San Carlos or down to, your drive down to Tucson. How green up was it in trying to green up around Picacho?
You know, I didn't really notice anything around Picacho that stood out. Where I really noticed it was when I drive to Tucson, I take 85 to 8 to Casa Grande, the Phoenix bypass route.
Yeah.
And that is one of my favorite drives from Gila Bend to Casa Grande. There's like three different mountain ranges you go to in these big valleys, and you don't hardly see any development.
Yeah.
You see a couple old abandoned rest stops here and there until you start to get to Stanton and you're coming into that last range into Gila Bend. There's millions of saguaros out there. You've got some beautiful mountain ranges. You have, and even with the mountain ranges, it's a flat drive. It zigs through them with hardly any elevation change. You can see for miles. That was just a gorgeous green drive.
Oh boy, I tell you, just taking a drive up to Boyce Thompson right now. It's like it's almost like driving through Ireland.
Even those old Malapai lava bouldery hills between Tonopah and Arlington and around where you went, they're green. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just, you know, wherever there's a little bit of soil mm-hmm. for something to grow in, those, you can just see though from a distance, those mountains are green. So yeah, it's going to be quite a show.
Now, we've talked fertilizing the whole show, and hand in hand with that is all the things you don't want to grow in your yard.
Right. But you might be a little late in some yards. There's some yards that are pretty green and fuzzy looking around town too that have a lot of weed growth that you need to. So if you've got weeds, you want to control them, whether you're hoeing them, pulling them, hula hoeing them, spraying them, whatever your method of choice is. The younger and smaller they are, the easier they are to get rid of, and the less pickup and disposal you need to do. So do it ASAP. Yeah. Yes.
A very interesting question on top of that has come in to info@rosieonthehouse.com, a gentleman by the name of Mark. He manages several large aggregate mines. So he's, you know, distributes to people that sell rock for landscaping.
Okay.
Completely overgrown by weeds and wants to know if there's something he can do regularly to, you know, get a big spray truck out there.
Well, he should be applying probably a liquid pre-emergent through a big spray rig. Yeah. Couple, three times, maybe four times a year.
Is there a liquid product he can buy in bulk that they sell
absolutely.
To a consumer like that?
Well, he can go to a commercial store like a Ewing or Horizon Irrigation or somebody and buy 2.5 gallon jugs of concentrate pre-emergent, yes.
And he'd be able to dump that into a spray trailer and get out there and hose it down?
Yep, absolutely.
That would be quite a project, because you don't want to deliver that full of weeds to whatever supplier or homeowner it's going to.
Does happen. It does happen.
Do you have a preferred liquid product or just whatever the...
Well, you know, a lot of those go by different names, and we're not, you know, I'm not that up on what they call
on that
them.
Kind of bulk.
Yeah, because we don't sell, you know, in those kind of quantities. And some of the same products that we sell have a different name on the commercial side. So, you know, just consult with those guys and tell them what you're doing, and they'll have a couple of choices for you probably.
For a consumer brand, what are
Well, Surfland is the old standby, you know, the dyed orange liquid product. Dimension is the granular product that we really like. Does a good job, especially as we go this next application of pre-emergent along about March, April, or early May is the one you really want to focus on for Spurge with a dimension. So yeah, that's a good one.
Spurge. Now, what is it about Spurge that makes it such a pain in the neck?
It produces a gazillion seeds. So it sprouts, it comes up, and it's already got seed on it. And then the birds just love it. They get in there and forage on it, and then they're
seed dropping
seeds, spreading seeds all over. And then, you know, we mow our lawns and spread the seed by the wheels and the feet and the lawnmower, and it loves heat. It thrives with hardly any water. I mean, you can go out in a gravel xeriscape yard in the middle of summer. That, you know, thing is getting no water and find some spurge growing. So
it's one of those aggravating weeds that does not grow faster than the lawn. So you have to go look for it until it takes over. Then all of a sudden it's everywhere. But
yeah,
you've got to make a point to look for
it. If you're going to pull it, be very careful. Pull it carefully. Put it right into don't carry it around the yard. Put it right into a plastic bag or something as you pull it, so you don't just keep spreading, because they just fall off, and if you're picking it up and carrying it around as you go, you're just dropping seeds everywhere. So,
and you said there's millions of them, and you only need one of those seeds to germinate to start.
It doesn't take very many. Yeah. So
the weeds.
If we could figure out a way, an economic use for spurge, make it edible or something, man, we'd have it made.
should be a pretty nasty season, too, for allergies. And they say finding local honey will help you combat that.
Suppose you're immunizing yourself by eating honey. Yeah, I would think.
So we'll have to get a local
We'll get Brett bee. Cameron mm-hmm. on and have him talk about what he likes to make honey out of. And the whole bee thing, just with the colony collapse and the lack of bees and all of that, these guys are really struggling to make honey.
Yeah. Barbara's first on the line at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888. Rosie for you. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning. I would like to know more about Wedalia as a ground cover.
Well, it's a great one. We also call it yellow dot. It's super fast growing. It takes sun or shade. Very, very rambunctious, easy to grow. The only thing it doesn't like is extreme cold. It can freeze back or frost back. But I've got it, had it in my yard for years and years and years. Get a little frost damage or cold damage, you take the weed eater and knock it back and let it come on. It's one of my very favorites. Very dark green, lush ground cover, doesn't need a ton of water, has a yellow flower on it, so you get the contrast of that yellow flower with the dark green foliage. It's a good one.
What's the purple one?
Well, there's Purple Heart, or what we call in the old days Purple Wandering Jew. It has a purple leaf, purple stem, pink
very
flower.
Very unique, very strong aroma when you walk past it.
Oh, that isn't that.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm at a loss.
I'll have to grab a little stem off it next time I pass one.
Okay.
Let's move to Tucson and bring Chris into the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888. Rosie for you. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. We have a mesquite tree. It's about 30 years old, but it's not terribly large around the trunk. And it seems to have sent out a root that has come above the ground for about 12 inches in length and perhaps an inch and a half above the ground and maybe 2 inches wide. But it crosses an area where people walk. It crosses a sidewalk area. And the obvious way to get rid of it, of course, just take an adze and flatten it out. But mm-hmm. I didn't know how dangerous that would be to the tree itself.
Probably not. I wouldn't hesitate to do it. You know, one root like that, if you need to, get rid of it, or as you mentioned, just kind of flatten it out, shouldn't really be an issue.
We appreciate the call. They say what it can take up to about a third this root loss.
Yeah,
on a mesquite tree.
Taking one root off of it, probably any tree, is not going to be that detrimental, if at all. So,
we appreciate the call, Chris, and that's always good news when you don't have to worry about completely replacing it. It's hard to cut down a good growing tree when it gets just to the side you want the shade, then it creates a problem and you have to cut it out. That's never a fun time.